Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them. And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hey, soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. Today I'm joined by Jonathan, the creator of Healthy Sports Parents. And in part one, we dig into why youth sports so often drift from joy to pressure and how parents unintentionally get pulled into it. This conversation is about perspective, behavior, and protecting the long-term development of players, families, and coaches. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
My name is Jonathan Carone. I'm the creator of Healthy Sports Parents, a social media and podcast platform helping parents raise healthy kids in a way that leads to long-term love of sport and activity.
I accidentally came across your social media, and that's how I found you. So I was like, I need to reach out to this guy because I like what he's doing. Because I need that help.
The social media side has blown up so much more. So I'll tell you this, it's a funny story. When I was first starting this, so about this time last year is when I started thinking about doing this. The first episode of the podcast came out in January of 2025. So in the lead up to it, I was talking to some friends, and one of my friends, she asked me, what would you love to get on social media in your first year? And I said, I think 10,000 would be incredible. And like, I don't know if I could do anything more than that, but if I could get 10,000 followers on social media in the first year, I would love that. And then the second week the podcast was on, I did a direct-to-camera reel and got 26,000 followers over a weekend. because I had a real blow up and get 6 million views in 2 weeks. So we're in November right now. I'm up over 100,000 followers across social in less than a year. And I told you this when you first reached out to me. I don't know what I'm doing right now because the thing has blown up so much faster than I ever imagined. So I'm just trying to keep up and not lose my mind.
And that's the hardest part of all this. It's when you start diving deep into it, you really get hooked into it and you really want to make a change. And I totally understand. I don't have a soccer background. Most of my listeners know this. I don't have a soccer background at all. I started because of my kids. And I have become obsessed with this game. I can sit here and talk all day about U soccer, statistics, stats, but ask me about anything else other than my day job in aviation. I'm a boring person. I'm a very boring person, I'm learning. But when it comes to U sports, I just light up because it's not just soccer anymore. It's crossing over because the conversation's the same.
Once you get it, you get it. And yes, you realize, so I have a degree in sport management with a minor in coaching, and then I have a master's degree in student ministry. So like my whole plan way back when, like in college, was to like be an athletic director and like impact kids that way and all that. So like that has always been a piece of me, but then life happens and I go take a different job and then I start my own business. And we're now 15 years after I graduated from seminary, and it's like, this is the first time that I'm getting to use both my degrees in a way that actually impacts people. And I'm not getting paid for it yet, I'll tell you that much. I told somebody the other day, I'm in this weird spot where the amount of work I'm doing on this platform is insane because it's like a second full-time job. And so like part of me wants to pull back because it's so much work and I'm not getting paid for it. But I also know if I ever eventually want to get paid for it, I have to continue going through this time of doing the work, focusing on the things that matter, building the relationships. And the crazy thing about it is the person I was talking to, they looked at me like, isn't that what you're telling parents that kids need to do too? I'm like, yeah, you're right. Like, I talk so much about the process and like doing these things and all, like not focusing on the outcomes. And it's like, crap, I'm starting to focus on outcomes, aren't I? It was just a reminder that to continue doing. I didn't set out when I started this to make a job out of it or to get paid for it. I started to help parents. That was the goal. And so just to continually remind myself of that, because it's anything in life is so hard. We get caught up in it. Like our kid starts playing soccer and maybe they're a little good. And it's really easy to get sucked into the idea of what's their future look like? Can we get them on an ECNL team? Can we get them on an MLS Next team? What do we got to do to get them there? And we forget. No, my kid's 7. They just want to play with their friends right now. The rest of it might come later, but we don't have to freak out about it right now. And it's just so hard because human nature is to, well, how big can I make this? Like, where can we take this? And
right,
it sneaks in really quickly.
My wife and I have been having a lot of conversations about my podcast. And that was the thing that I laid out 3 goals. My first goal is education. It's just, the world of sports is so confusing, especially as a parent. I have a very close friend. He goes, give it a year, you'll know more than me. His son is 5 years older than my son. And he goes, we were talking the other day and he's like, you passed me about a year ago, more about what's going on in the culture than I do. And I go, but you know what's going on with your kid. You know what's going on with his future, what he wants and the direction he's going. He goes, but I didn't know that when we first started talking 3 years ago, your son was just 6 and 7 scoring screamers of goals every single weekend and 4v4. And now he's playing 11v11. And like, he goes, but you know, the inner workings of our community. And I go, it's because I have curiosity. I go, if more parents had curiosity, I think all of our kids' goals, aspirations would be so much farther. And I think it's a great segue into where you're at and what you're doing. Where did the pathway of everything cross for you? You said this is the first point in your life that you're using your degrees all in one location. So when did that epiphany came to you, that calling in life for you to be where you're at today, to be doing all this, started?
My daughter, she's 10 now. She was 9 last fall. She had a rough soccer season and had a coach she said that she wanted to turn the girls into beasts, and they were U11 girls. Super competitive mom, played high school soccer, really knows the game, and that was her goal. And so she was hard on the girls. And I remember a couple times coming home from practice and Olivia just, she wasn't having fun. Like we were having conversations. She was crying. And there was a point we were sitting in her bed one night and I said, Liv, I don't think you care how good you are. She goes, I don't really. It's like, I think you just want to play soccer with your friends. Yeah, that's all I want to do. I'm like, oh. So like we diagnosed it at the moment. She says, I'm tired of getting yelled at. And I'm like, oh, okay. And like, I knew like she enjoys playing soccer, but at 9 years old in fourth grade, she didn't really care about being a beast. And then we were a rec team. And at the end of every fall season, we used to play this tournament. Lowest level of rec slash academy, like lowest level of, or excuse me, rec slash the lowest level of academy, just to see where we are, to introduce the girls to what could come in the future. And we're at this tournament last fall, and I saw a dad on the sideline yelling at his daughter, and she had to be 8 or 9 years old. And I just looked at this dad, and from looking at him, I could size him up, like background. I saw where the team was from. Like I knew. And so he was yelling at his daughter to the point that daughter ended up crying and leaning into mom, and the dad kept going. And I had sympathy for the daughter, but I had empathy for the dad, because I guarantee you dad did not wake up that morning and say, hey, Ian, you know what I want to do today? I want to yell at my daughter to the point that she cries on the sideline of a soccer game. That sounds like a ton of fun. I guarantee you he didn't think that or plan to do that, but something inside of him started rearing up and his emotions overflowed. And I know had I not had the training I had, that's a path I could have gone down, because my dad, I remember having to tell him to shut up in the middle of a basketball game in fifth grade because he was yelling at me so much from the sidelines. So I had empathy for the dad. I realized I really think most parents want to do better. They just haven't been taught how. And so I went home and I asked a couple people and I'm like, hey, I have this idea. What do you think? And every single one of them said yes. I'm like, all right, okay, let me start this podcast idea. I've done a couple podcasts before, so the podcast thing was easy for me to jump into. I was like, but can I get guests? So it's not just Jonathan talking about this. Can I get people? Reached out to Division I baseball coach. He said yes right away. Reached out to a guy I knew who played in Major League Baseball. He said yes right away. Reached out to a friend of mine who's a women's soccer coach at the University of Florida. He said yes right away. Within a month, I had the first 7 episodes scheduled. And so it started to snowball. And then once that Death of Rec League video hit back in January and the thing blew up on social, it's like, I'm getting Olympians reaching out to me. I'm getting other people saying, hey, I got a connection to this person. You should talk to them. And so I'm getting these coaches and like, to the point where over the summer, a sitting Division I coach reached out to me and said, hey, I love what you're doing. If I can ever help with anything, let me know. And I'm like, okay, so there's a need here. And it's just a matter of kind of like you said, like, educate parents, let them know what it is, because I just don't think people have thought about it. They're reacting and they're acting out of a natural state. And most often when we act out of our natural state, it's not always the healthiest. Because the healthy stuff takes energy. And as parents, we're just so dang tired from all the parenting crap we got to do that to think about how we're viewing things or to think about our emotions or to think about what's causing us is just not top of mind. And so I tried to come up with a way to give people easy advice and easy tips, and somehow we're here.
I think you touched on a few things that I think parents are tired. When doing all these interviews, I think my biggest thing I've been focusing on, and mostly for my kid, is the culture. And I was really heavily into sports psychology, because at the end of the day, it's my son from the age of about 5 told us, I'll never forget this. We're sitting in his bedroom, tucking him in goodnight. And we tell him he has to start getting good grades in school, because if he ever wants to be successful in life, you have to be smart. And he goes, I don't need to be smart. I'll hire someone. I'm going to be a pro soccer player. At 5 years old, 6 years old, this is the conversation he's telling us. And I'm thinking back. It's like, I never had these conversations with my parents. I never had the conversation of my dreams and aspirations at 5 and 6 years old with my parents to go where I want to be. And then I'm looking back at my last interview I just did, and he talks about we mirror our influences that we had in our lives. And I'm thinking back, like, I'm mirroring my dad. My dad was so bad, he had to sign a contract with the school for his behavior, that he wouldn't yell. And I have stories, memories of him berating the officials. I remember him also going at the end of some of these games that he was the worst at, going down and having a laugh with the official because he knew him. He grew up with him. But I'm thinking back, I don't know any of these officials, and that's who I yell at. I don't yell at my kids. Maybe to hustle and work harder. That's about it. I can't tell them how to play soccer. I'm not that good. All I care is about their work ethic as a parent. But at the end of the day, my problem is the official. Like, I know enough about the game, and I'll take clips, and I have friends, and I'll send them to them. What's your opinion on this? Because I lost my mind on this. I didn't say anything, or maybe I did say something, and I regret it at the end of the game. And but I realized my son's mirroring my behavior also in the match. When I lose my emotion or the fans lose their emotions, it doesn't have to be me anymore. It's the fans. It doesn't matter what side. But at the end of the day, we have to be the influence, and we have to be the influence for good. And that's why I think what you're doing, what you want to do, what you're capturing. And so how does that, you talked about the purpose and why you're doing it all. How has the mission been since you started? Has it evolved with the podcast and your social media outputs that you've been doing and the messaging you've changed? The mission started here and now you're here. Down the road, has the mission expanded, or have you been able to narrow it down more and the goals that you want to have?
I would say it has expanded a little bit, but the values are the same. So there was a little axiom that I learned in seminary from an 800-year-old guy named Elmer Towns. He literally wrote the book on Sunday school in the 50s, where he traveled around the country and tried to study what were making these Sunday schools and churches successful. And through it all, he came up with this idea where he said, methods are many, principles are few, methods may change, but principles never do. And that stuck with me for the last, 16 years now. And it's something that influences so much of what I do. So what I would say is the principles that I wanted to get across when I started this are still the same, but the methods I use them have probably expanded a little bit, and the use cases for those principles have expanded a little bit. Because one of the first things I ever did, even before I had the idea for the podcast, I created this hoodie that said, "Youth sports are not about winning." Because a couple of years ago, I was at 7 and 8 year old YMCA basketball on a Saturday morning, and parents were flipping out. So I bought the shirt just as my little subtle dig in games to, hey, this isn't about winning. We're about teaching kids stuff. So I still had the same principles back then. I say back then, like it was 3 years ago. And so that's still one of my big principles, is that youth sports are not about winning. They are about teaching kids the tools they need to have success in life at whatever they choose to do when they're adults. That's still one of my main principles. But what I have learned through the conversations is parents are just repeating what they were taught a lot of times. And they were taught winning is everything and nothing else matters. Is that true, though, at 9-year-old soccer? Is that true 12-year-old soccer? Is that even true for 16-year-old varsity sports? And so what I realize is that everyone, and if this doesn't answer your question, you can stop me, but everyone comes from their specific background. So people who live in an area where the high school is 3,000 kids, and they realize that to make a high school team, a kid has to specialize super early, their perspective is going to be different than someone who lives in an area like mine, where to make the varsity soccer team, all you need is a physical and a pair of shin guards. Because we don't have the numbers, and we'd probably buy you the shin guards if you needed them, but we don't have a JV team. So we simply don't have the numbers here in an 850 person high school. So perspectives are very, very impactful for what people are thinking. And so I asked the question, I was like, so you tell me, my little small rural town, we have one soccer club for the entire county. The U13 guys that are playing 11v11 this year for the first time ever, they've got maybe 14 kids on the team because that's all we have. It's not like we had 100 kids try out and we cut it down to 15. We had 14 kids try out for the team. but they are playing against teams from Charlotte, from Greensboro, from these bigger areas that have larger talent pools to pull from. And they're even the lowest level of Classic, Classic D, the fourth level of Charlotte is going to be deeper than the first level of our county. And they have better resources. They have indoor facilities. They have lit fields. We don't have lights on our field. So from November to February, like trying to find a place to practice is nearly impossible. So you're telling me if winning is everything, that those boys who are competing against people with more resources, a deeper talent pool, and better training, because we have dad coaches because we don't have paid coaches, you're telling me if they lose those games, yet they're getting better, they're playing better, and they're doing the things that they want to, that just because they lose, they're not successful? Well, why? And helping parents understand this, like, growth is what matters. Because here's the funny thing. When those boys got to seventh grade and they played for the middle school against teams in our other middle schools in our area, they won the league. For the first time in the 50-year history of my middle school, those boys won the league this fall. But they go out in club ball and get their pants beat off half the time because they're playing against teams with better resources and deeper talent pools. So how much does winning actually matter versus what we're teaching the kids through the process of going out and competing?
I think that goes back to, I can use my son. He guest played this past weekend with a coach, and the club wants a team in this league so that he puts him in, and we're watching it. And I hope this is okay, coach, and I'm sharing this, but watching them play, they got their butt hit. I think this final score was over 15 in 11-v-11 match. But not once did those boys give up. They played the game as if it mattered the whole entire way through. And then I'm thinking back. My son has guest played with him a couple of times, and because they needed numbers, because sick kids and things like that, and or injuries, whatever it may have been. And he reached out and asked for help. And watching them play, they played the same way as if they're winning, or as if they're losing. And I have to give him credit for how he has coached these kids. In my opinion, are they the best talented kids in the Metroplex? No, but I can tell you this. They probably have some of the better attitudes than the kids that are on the winning teams that are dominating the area. We have 300,000 kids in the DFW Metroplex that's playing every weekend.
And in 15 years, when those kids are adults in jobs with potential spouses and possibly kids, which one's going to matter more? The attitude to face hard challenges with a joyous spirit and a never quit attitude, even if you're getting your pants beat off of you, or some of the other attitudes you see on the field, kids complaining if things don't go their way, or showboating because they happen to be more talented. I want to win just as much as anybody. But at the end of the day, this stuff doesn't matter long term. The results of these games are not what our kids are going to remember 10, 15 years from now. Like I can't tell you how many games I remember the result of when I was a kid. I don't know, but I can tell you the coaches who made an impact on my life. I can teach, I can tell you the lessons I learned through sports. That's what matters long-term, and that's what sticks with kids. And I'll use it just because you brought it up. I'm the PA announcer for my high school baseball team, and we're a pretty good team in the state. We had a team that's about 15, 20 minutes from us that is very Black and Hispanic school. A couple years ago, new school got opened. All the affluent white kids moved to the new school. The lower income minority kids stayed at this school. So what used to be a baseball power, we could score 100 runs on this team every time we played them if we wanted to. It's to the point where the rules in North Carolina are 15 runs after three, and it's the mercy rule. And we literally have to step off the base just to let them pick us off and tag them out because they can't get us out. But those boys, when they're on the field, first off, they signed up to play. They're not out doing whatever else they could be doing. And so I just remember, because I used to feel bad when we had to play this team because of how not talented they were, and watching them lose 15 to nothing every game throughout the season. But last season, I saw a pop fly And a guy just missed it. He completely misplayed it. Like, it's something that a middle school player could do. And his teammate busted his balls for about it right there on the field. And they both laughed about it. And I realized in that moment, oh, these boys are having fun. These boys, they know how good they are. They know how good they aren't. They have this expectation, but they're friends and they're out here playing a game they're enjoying and they're having fun. And it completely shifted the way I watched whenever we played that game, that team, and made me enjoy watching them. Because once I noticed that, I started picking up the little things. And then when a kid did make a play and get an out, how proud he felt. Because, or when a kid got a hit and got to get on base. And that's what that kid's going to remember. Yeah, he played on a crappy team, but those guys might be friends for the rest of their life through a game that they're playing terribly. And which is more important, winning some games in high school or creating friends that will support you for your entire life?
I think you're right. I think part of the problem in our culture today is high school sports are considered second tier now.
In some places, in some sports.
In some sports, like American football, softball, baseball, might be second tier, especially here in Dallas. Soccer is predominantly a big sport here, but basketball and baseball are predominant. Let me rephrase this. American football, volleyball, like I think American football is the only sport that's not a club sport here anymore in Texas.
Correct.
Other than track and field.
Yeah.
Other than track and field sports. Everything else is a club sport. And a lot of high school, like I still talk to a lot of parents that are high schoolers and on their fill out form, the tryout for varsity soccer, what league do you play in and who is your coach and what club? And they don't even have to see the player. They're already making their minds up if this player is good enough. And I'm thinking, I love the case of, what's his name? I'm drawing a blank. Eltrain, the Ricardo Pepe that played for FC Dallas. He was found at a high school game. He never played club soccer because his family couldn't afford it. But was found at a high school game. I think it was a JV game. And they sent a coach was down there watching, down there for a match for the MLS next team. And he always goes watch his high school game, especially if he can. And he went and watched his high school. And he wrote back, we need this player playing for our academy. If we had that standard here, when will we know that when we miss a kid? And I think that's a problem in our society, especially in the major metropolitan cities, maybe not in the rural, more rural cities. But it gives the kid a chance to be seen. And I think there's a lot of things there for kids to be seen and be brought up and behavior.
There's so many pieces to it when it comes to high school versus club, because I come from the background that like playing with your buddies from school, representing your town is still a big deal. Like that's just a core fundamental belief for me. And knowing that most kids are never going to play in college, that it's like, what matters most? And I think there should be, I did a reel recently. There should be a place for both. There should like, a friend of mine, his stepson played MLS Next, and kind of crazy story, but he lucked into it as a freshman in high school because he played soccer as a freshman and the high school season was too short for him. He wanted a longer season. And so he was the type of kid that missed a little bit of playing soccer in high school, but MLS Next was great for him because he wanted to play 10 months out of the year. Like he loved it so much he wanted to. He missed playing with his buddies at school some, and he would go to their games and cheer them on like crazy. But for him, playing MLS Next was a great thing, and it worked out for him. And Nick, my friend, will tell you, like they lucked out that Nick got a promotion at work at the same time that AJ got selected for MLS Next, or else they wouldn't have been able to afford it because of how expensive it was. But I look at my son, who is 9 years old in third grade right now. We might play classic in middle school. Maybe. Varsity's where he'll top out. My daughter, varsity's where she'll top out. She might play classic as well, but the sport's not my kid's entire life. They have other things that they want to do. And that's not that for listeners, that is not a dig at kids who make their sport their entire life, because every kid gets to choose what they're passionate about. But like my daughter does dance. And she does other things. And to play a year-round club would not let her do the other things she wants to do. So she's making the choice to not, and she's in fifth grade right now. So this could change. Like, she might get the soccer bug and want to play year round by seventh grade. I don't know. We'll protect that a little bit because I don't love playing year round. But just the idea that so many people think they want to play in college. So many parents want their kids to play in college because college is really freaking expensive. And I think two things can be true, or two things are true. One, I don't think the average person realizes how good college soccer players are, or college athletes in general. And I don't think the average person realizes the commitment it takes to be a college athlete. Because you see these schools, they sign freshman signing classes of 8-9 players, depending on the sport. And then come senior night, there's 3 of them left because they get injured or kids quit because they don't like it or they're not getting the playing time. It is a second job. And so because of that, we think we want our kids to go play in college, or our kid says they want to go play in college, or whatever it is. And so the way to get there, the college coaches show up at the club events. They don't show up at high schools very often anymore, which if you look at it from their shoes, of course they're going to show up at the club. It's where the talent is all in one place. Like, going to a high school game, you might see 2 kids. Go to a tournament, you're going to see 20. It's a numbers game at that point. But because so many either want to play in college or don't realize how hard it is, they think club's their best option to get there. And there are some sacrifices you make, both monetarily and relationally, to do that, which it can be great too. I don't want it to sound like I'm pooping on club, but it goes back to my idea. I don't think the average parent is educated on so much of the process of youth sports and so many of the things around it. And so they're going in it with ignorance because they just haven't been taught.
You're right. I don't think most parents understand. I think Anson Dorsten did an interview. I think it was the Champion Way podcast. I don't know if you listened to it at all. I think Anson was on that one. And he was talking about, he had incoming freshmen doing the beep test. And he told them what they had to score to be a starter, to be a candidate to be a starter, not to be starting the game, but to be a candidate for a starter on the starting 11, or I guess making roster might be the better way of putting it. And starting 18. And it is, they come in and he tells them, brings them in and sits down with them as a group chat with the captains and them. And these ask him, like, where do you think you stand on this team? Where do you think you are? And they say, I think I should be a starter. But your beep test score says this. You're not a starter based on this standard test. Why don't you think you hit this number? And I said, maybe I didn't work hard enough. Maybe I was not feeling well that day. Maybe I took the summer off too much, whatever the case may be. And he's sharing this story and he realized, no, like, you weren't determined enough. I gave you all you had to do throughout the summer to qualify. And did you do those things? And the answer is no. And it comes back to that discipline. I don't think we as parents truly understand what it takes to, I'll probably say 99% of parents don't know what it takes to have a player that goes plays in college or be a pro athlete, or let alone play at a high level. Soccer is becoming more and more common. I think sports are becoming more and more common. There's more avenues for kids to play in different sports. But looking at it just from the soccer perspective, I would say my wife and I never played soccer in high school. I had 3 months. I'll give it that. Or what we did in PE. We didn't have a club when I was growing up, or not club or a high school team, because we were too small. And it just blows my mind that all these parents think little Johnny, little Susie at 6-7 years old are going to be the next thing. And yelling from the sideline, screaming at them from the sideline, never gets them anywhere. You have to let the coach do it and let them learn through the game. I think that's been the hardest lesson for me as a parent, is letting the game be the lesson and letting us stand back. My wife always says, we pay a lot of money for our kids to play sports. We aren't the coach. Let the coach make the choices. And I go, but we pay a lot of money for refs. I'll yell at the refs. Which doesn't help the equation either. It's, like you said, it's taking a step back, educating, learning the process. And I think what you're doing on your podcast, talking to all these folks, and what you're trying to give as an answer, and then I think talking to pro athletes, I think my son's been very fortunate that he has mentors over the years and private coaches that we just luckily got to meet and to hear their stories. And I've been able to share a couple of them now. And I think hearing them and having parents hearing them, I think it's so important because it's a gnarly life. It's not an easy path.
I also think, so two things in that. Number one, I think parents feel like they can make the kid want it. And if the kid doesn't want it on their own, if you're having to motivate your kid, they're not going to get there. Like you might have the outlier, but every statistic says if you're having to motivate your kid, they're not, they might play high school. They might play club through high, but they're not going to get to the higher levels of college because if they are not intrinsically motivated to do the work, they're just not going to get there. Because talk to college coaches. They'll tell you. They can tell the ones who – they can tell the kids within a month who did the work because mom and dad made them versus who was waking up on their own and dragging mom and dad to practice. They know. And the kid whose mom and dad made them typically doesn't last. I think once, like, we've got to get through this idea that we can make our kid want it. We can create opportunities to help them fall in love with it and want it, but we can't make them want it.
Today's conversation with Jonathan focused on how easily outcome-driven thinking sneaks into youth sports and how parents often, without realizing it, start reacting instead of responding. We talk about why most parents want to do better, how kids mirror adult behavior on the sideline, and why growth, curiosity, and instinctive, intrinsic motivation matters far more than early wins and rankings. And in part two, we take the step further in digging into exposure access and what really changes when kids and parents see the next level up in person. A big thanks for Jonathan for joining me today. Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.